Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast. Proverbs 21:9 suggests to some that hiding on a roof is the best option when their wife is angry. But where can you hide if the woman of the house is 50 feet tall? Well, guess what? We're going to talk about that some when we talk about today's movie, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Guys, we are back with the summer drive-in. I am so excited. This has become one of my favorite parts of the summer. The last 2 years, we started doing this drive-in series where we spend 20 to 30 minutes a week and we just talk about a movie. And this year, we have a really fun theme. We're doing decades. So each week, we'll go up a decade until the last week of the drive-in. We're going to be talking about a movie from 2020s. But we're starting off in the 1950s, in a 1958 film, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. I am Joshua Knoll, and I'm here with the one and only Reverend Justin Coleman, who suggested the movie. How's it going, Justin?
It's going well. Can't wait to discuss this interesting movie.
Yeah, man. Guys, hey, go down to the show notes below. You'll see a playlist of the last bit of summer drive-ins we've done, and soon we'll make a playlist of this one if you want to keep following up with it. So check back next Friday for a movie from the 1960s. Here we go. We're going to jump right into this. Justin, I drive to Chapel Hill, right? I meet up with you. We take one of our cars, we go to the drive-in, and they play this film. At the end, we look at each other. What's the first thing you say, man?
Well, if we travel back in time and we were sitting here as dudes watching this movie, we might sit in stunned, awkward silence.
That's possible. Yeah.
Or we might just say, man, what did we just watch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, there's two different versions of this. Like, there's a version of like us in the 1950s where it's like, oh, I think there's the version of us now with like a little bit of knowledge of what for me, I didn't know. I've never seen the movie until you suggested it. And honestly, this is kind of embarrassing. I didn't think it was a real movie. Like, I thought, like, I've seen the poster before and I thought this was like a joke. Like, I didn't think there was really a movie titled Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. So having watched it and it was everything I expected. Like, I was expecting campy, funny, goofiness. That was also a little bit of horror. I didn't expect the sci-fi element. I will say that. I think maybe if we watched it today at the drive-in, I'd probably look at you still grinning just because it's so, like, to me, it's a little just funny, even when it wasn't meant to be. I think I should be like, I really wasn't expecting the aliens. That might be the first thing I say to you. I was not expecting the alien.
Yeah, the alien dude was weird. It was strange. It was odd.
I think if I was thinking about this for a while, if I had to describe this movie to someone, I think I it would be sci-fi horror, but also Andy Griffith. It's like what if a species of giant aliens visited Mayberry?
Yes, that's so good.
Oh, man. So, all right, I talked a little bit already about like my experience not knowing that it was a real movie. But Could you tell me some about, like, what was your relationship with this film like? Like, when did you first learn about it and why you chose this one for our 1950s film?
Well, there are so many interesting movies that that one could watch across the 50s. This one strikes me as one of the most odd and unexpected movies by way of how it unfolds. And so I watched this movie years and years ago as I was kind of going through looking at some of the early classic horror movies, if you will. And this was one of those that I'd heard about. And I thought, well, I've seen the poster. I might as well go ahead and watch it. And as you say, it was nothing like I expected, other than at one point you do get to see a 50-foot woman. But apart from that, it was unexpected. And so I picked this film because it strikes me that in its own way, it challenges and maybe even mocks the popular view of 50s life that we imagine today. And this view at a time where the idealized nuclear family is the picture of American life here, and clearly defined gender roles and hierarchies are a part of that. This takes that and shakes it up and critiques it, I think, in interesting ways.
Yeah. And I know we're really going to get deep with this. We don't have a ton of time to get deep with it. We're going to get deep with it. I think for me, one of the most interesting things that really stood out is how, and honestly, I think if this came out today, it would be criticized so heavily for being so woke. And this came out in the 50s. So that's so weird to me. But like, there's two sides of this for me where, like, on the one hand, man, is it really progressive to have this like character who is a female who is empowered because she's the rich one, not the man. Right. And she becomes this giant, powerful monster even. And it's like, whoa, she's so cool. Right. Like she really, even the actress just carried the film, really.
Yes.
But also there's part of me who's like, wait a minute. They also are kind of showing that she has the wealth. She has the power. And she still needs a man. And part of me is like, I don't love that part, though. But also, how much do I expect from a film of the 50s? I feel like I can't give them our values today. Be like, why aren't you holding up to this?
Absolutely. I mean, I love the critiques. The whole town, apart from the butler and partially the sheriff, are complicit in the wrongdoing toward Nancy Archer, who is this woman. And I think that's, the critiques are powerful. And as you say, it would be thought of as woke, kind of a woke parable in a way. And I dislike exactly what you dislike, that her power is still mitigated, muted by the need for this man. And also, one of the things I dislike is you don't actually get to see her use her mind, her mental faculties as a source of power, which might be the thing that is really what's too scary to put on film there in the 1950s.
Oh, yeah. 'Cause she didn't happen upon wealth. She earned it. So she had to be. Oh, man, true. That's a fun thing to think about. So it's a pretty short film. It's like an hour long. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to attempt a quick summation, and you can tell everybody if I missed the mark or not. But basically, it's a woman and a man, and I forget people's names because I'm terrible with names. The husband is cheating on his wife with a redhead. I did catch that. They mentioned that she was a redhead. And everybody just kind of, the whole town just kind of is helping him get by with it more or less. And there's three points in the movie. And this part, this is something that really stood out to me as someone who's just like watching it to critique it a little bit. At the beginning, she's upset because she sees her husband look at this other woman and she's like, oh, and she goes running off. She has this encounter with an alien and she runs back. And the first thing she does when she encounters the alien is she's looking for her husband. She wants a companion, someone to tell about this, someone to share her experience with. And he's too busy cheating on her, right? And you have this moment of her yelling, Harry, 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 that might be his name. I think. Is it Harry?
Yes, that's right.
Harry. Ah, I got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then halfway through the movie, there's another moment where I forget exactly what it is, but she's going back and looking for him again. And she's Harry. He's busy cheating on the woman. And then come the very end, after she's experienced this terrible thing that's turned her into this giant monster, what does she do? She goes looking for her husband, Harry, who of course is cheating on her again. And this time he ends up getting killed because of it.
As does the woman who he's cheating with whose name is Honey.
I couldn't figure out if that was her name or if that was just what he called her. Redhead named Honey. Okay. Well, that's that. So, man, if you had to rate this film 0 to 10, what would you rate it?
By way of the social critique that they're trying to do in 1950s America, if I were in the 50s, I'd rank it fairly highly. I'd put it at somewhere between a 7 or 7 to 9, even at that time. Today, it's still a pretty strong 6 to 7.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's difficult for me because I do have a lot of love for the really old black and white horror films, like the old Frankenstein and Miss Frankenstein, all that kind of stuff. Like, I love those. Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, fantastic movie. You know, so for me, part of it scratches that itch where I'm like, ooh, classic old monster movie. And it's plays into all the tropes perfectly. And I think what it's trying to say about equality when it comes to genders is a really good thing. Of course, with my current modern sensitivities, there's a lot of microaggressions that I'm like, that kind of deters me, even though, again, I don't try to hold them to my current values. But if I'm rating it, I got to rate it off of how much I'm able to enjoy it. And when I see stuff like that, that really irks me. It's hard for me to enjoy it so much. And then to kind of the ridiculousness of the alien plot, like honestly, they never try to explain it. It's just there are aliens. Now she's giant, you know.
Yeah,
they don't really explain it. So for me, that deters a little bit, too. But the acting I thought was really well done, and the classic monster vibe is great. So I'll go 7.5. I'll be generous.
Yeah. It's really an interesting movie in this way, as we think about gender and as we think about society related to gender and relationships and equality. Because again, this entire town is complicit. Everyone sees Harry in this relationship with, in this adulterous relationship with Honey.
That's so hard not to laugh.
They're in public. The police know about it. They know when people go to look for Harry, they know exactly where he is. They know exactly who he's with. He's not trying to hide it at all. The entire town is comfortable hiding it from Nancy Archer and treating her as if she's really out of her mind and a drunk. And in ways we see when the doctor is talking to Harry Archer about Nancy. Well, the doctor says, gosh, she was so great and full of life, and they got together. Then there was this change after they got married, and she wasn't quite the same. And then when the husband, this abusive, cheating husband, leaves, at least psychologically abusive, mentally abusive, cheating husband leaves, the doctor says, gosh, won't y'all get back together again? And then questions, did I do the right thing? So, and you,
this town,
even this enlightened, supposedly enlightened, wise doctor who continues to be turned to, all of these folks are complicit in the harm that is done to this woman.
Who I think is, the butler might be the only exception.
The butler,
I feel like he stood up for her. That was it.
The butler is steadfast in his support of her. Absolutely. The butler is the only one. The sheriff, for arguably much of the film, is close to the right side of things, and then begins to buckle there at the end. But certainly the butler is steadfast and true all the way through.
Oh yeah. It's amazing how many different characters they're able to like really characterize within just an hour. Yes. Sure, the movies don't have to be that long, guys are saying. I like some really long movies, but I'm like, man, this said a lot in an hour. Speaking of, this is just like a quick sidebar. The deputy, like the Barney Fife of the film, God, he was funny. Like he was dumb, and he was like getting paid off by the guy. Like, yeah, tell her I was doing this. But he was just so dumb that it just kind of was so fun for me. Like it didn't fit the film at all, but it was fun.
It was fun. And let me tell you some of the best lines, I wish I could remember them verbatim. Some of the best lines were actually offered by Honey Parker because they were sinister.
Yeah.
From the very get-go. I mean, we're minutes into the movie and Honey's saying, all right, won't you murder her?
Yeah.
Sinister plot right from the very beginning by this Honey Parker character.
Yeah, she a few times just straight up goes, you know, I know a way that we could have all that wealth and be together. I know how you can get her money. And I was like, ooh, man. Yeah, she was just downright evil.
And so you could almost argue that the people in the movie who were savvy and shrewd were really Honey Parker and Nancy Archer. Those are the two that were.
Yeah.
The men in the movie, apart from the butler, were...
They're all just dogs and also just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. They were a mess, all of them. No matter what their degrees were, who they were a mess.
So you brought it up, and I feel like we have to talk about it. We're on a Christian podcast, and we have to ask that question. The doctor said, maybe I shouldn't have encouraged them to get back together. Mm. And so much of church history, we just know you've got to stay married, you got to stay married, you got to forgive, you got to forgive, you got to be back together. Is it ever a good thing to have divorce?
Yeah. He has a... As a
also, parent. Remember, I'm married, so don't be too harsh on marriage either.
So, as a pastor who has journeyed through this with many people, and having been actually a part of this journey myself, there are, I believe, times where the covenant of marriage has been so stress strained, broken, where we think, well, what is both the most loving, good thing and what is the most harmful thing? As you look at those two, so we're trying to do good and do no harm. We can say that this relationship is harmful. Mm-hmm. Now, there's certainly a clear biblical warrant to say that if there has been infidelity, that the dissolution
of Jesus was kind of explicit about that one. Yeah.
Right. But I've seen plenty of times when the active harm and the deep brokenness of active harm, I should say, and or the deep brokenness of the relationship, I believe warrants it. Now, I would also say that in the best of circumstances, a Christian community helps one to discern this. One of the most powerful moments happened for me when a couple came in where there was quite a bit of brokenness in their marriage. And they said, could you help us convene our Sunday school class and help us discern whether we should stay together or get a divorce with our Sunday school class? Could you help us discern together? That was powerful. Moment of Christian community.
Yeah. And it's challenging for me because I don't want to say the divorce can be a good thing, because part of me is like, obviously the goal is to be married and to share love and life and all that stuff forever. I'm going to answer this two different ways. I want to answer this in like a historical context way and then in like a personal way, but not in that order. So personally, I do think, and even I even told my wife before we got married that I didn't want my vows to be that, hey, this will never be a thing with divorce. It's like, for me, actually, it's more important that I'm committed to your well-being, your life, your love, and you know, your happiness. To me, that's an important thing that I am committed to. And I'm so committed to that, that I even want to promise you that if I think us getting divorced is what will best contribute to your well-being, your happiness, and your life, that is something that I am committed to seeing through, even as difficult as I think it would be, which that is not something that I think even rose in our mind once, but since we've been married, but it's something that from the beginning to me, it was important to state, hey, actually the goal is for your happiness and for your well-being, not that, hey, we stick together, even if it makes us both miserable forever.
Right.
You know, now, for those who want me to get biblical behind that, there are, you know, God wants us to live life more abundantly. That is why he gave us life, right? We are saved for freedom. Just for freedom's sake. You know, these are Bible verses that are there and they're not about marriage, but I think that it would be difficult for me to say I believe that and then to not carry that belief into how I act out my marriage in real time, right? So even though it's that belief isn't about marriage, it does impact my marriage. So that's the practical. The historical context, especially if we're looking in the 50s, this is when we finally get no-fault divorces in America. Mm. And yeah, divorce rate skyrocketed and everyone talked about how it was a terrible thing. But was it a terrible thing? Because a lot of the times it was women who finally are able to leave abusive relationships, who are finally able to leave things that are causing them to just be miserable, right? And are like, they were free. And for me, I think that no-fault divorces was actually a really liberating thing that was in fact a good thing, even though it made divorce rates skyrocket in America.
Right. You know, it is, and I agree with you. I mean, I would not call it a good, it is one of those things that may be, it's justified for certain circumstances. And it is one of those things that God can transform toward the good. I mean, brokenness. I'm in a Romans 8 mode. This is brokenness that can be transformed to something that is good. But let's all recognize that it's brokenness is a sad thing.
Yeah, it's never a happy day, but might be a necessary day.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I just gonna throw out there that this is one of those things, especially within like how we make our own statement of belief for our podcast, where we might not all agree on here. So, you know, we have two of our hosts. There's 14. It's possible. Some of the other hosts are like, yep, nope, that's not worth it. So hold that tension with it. This is what we believe. We're speaking for ourselves, and other people on the show might believe differently. And I'm sure they'll talk about it one day.
Right.
Two last things I wanted to talk about. Serious one and a not so serious one. What do you want first?
Oh gosh, let's go serious and then we'll have fun with the not so serious.
Okay. The serious one. So it's something I complained about earlier that I also think has a little nugget of truth hidden in it. How, even though she was rich and even though she became this powerful being, she still needed a man. I don't like that it was, oh, she still needed a man. But here's what I do like, the little nugget of truth hidden in there is I think that we all still have a desire for companionship. Right. Like no matter how much wealth I get, no matter how much power I have, I still have a need to share my life. And, you know, and for me, and I think this is really funny, I would have a lot less of a problem with it if it was a man who became giant who still needed his wife. Right. Right. Because like just the way our society is such that we belittle a man's need for a woman and try to emphasize a woman's need for a man. When really, I think the need that is there that's important to talk about is we all have a need for companionship, whether it's romantic or not. Some people are aromantic. That's fine. But I still think there's a need for companionship that all humans have that is highlighted here, even if maybe that wasn't the intention. I don't know. Right. What do you think?
Well, I absolutely agree. And, you know, in theology, I think about Ignatian spirituality, for instance, that talks about ordered and disordered affections. So a disordered affection can actually be something that is a good, but it has become disordered, right? So the good here is the desire for connection, the deep desire for connection that we see Nancy has and has for Harry. That relationship between wife and husband, between spouses, should be one that you deeply long for and care about. What's been disordered about it is the way their relationship works and the way his manipulations work yeah. and keep her longing for something that he will, that's always out of her reach. Mm. So that's how I think about it. So yes, the affection is a good thing. It is simply disordered within this relationship. Mm.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's something to think about. I don't really have anything to add. That is exactly what I was hoping we could get at. And you just said it better than I could. So we'll go to the fun part. Maybe I'll tackle this one. So for me, I didn't realize how much this film has impacted other movies and stuff. The poster is even in, I think it's in like Phineas and Ferb at some point. This poster is seen all over the place in other films and like little nods to it here and there. I wanted to ask you, like, where all have you seen this movie elsewhere? But first, I got to mention the best reference that I would have never knew. Like, I got the joke in reverse for this one. Monsters versus Aliens. I was thinking about it when I watched this because I was like, wait a minute. There was a really tall woman in that movie, that DreamWorks film. And I love that film. Susan from that movie, if you didn't know her height, and this is such a great joke, she is 49 feet and 11 inches tall. That is just the best joke possible. Like DreamWorks, I just am astounded, and I'm so sad I didn't get the joke the first go round.
No, exactly. I mean, that's the first one that came to my mind as well. But
oh man, this, great.
But this image, the poster, is iconic. I've seen it all over the place. I can't remember a time where I hadn't seen the poster, and the poster alone could be worth analyzing. Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at it and this figure that is both over sexualized but also powerful, and the power is what takes over, crushing all of this man-made, and here I really want to say man-made stuff, like these freeways that are beginning to help us move faster in more places than we had before. And you look at all the people running away, mostly dudes in suits running away here. I mean, it's such a great image that I feel like I've seen all over the place.
Oh, yeah, truly, it is an iconic image. I think everybody stop and look up the poster right now and just really analyze it for yourself. I think everyone should watch the movie, but at the very least, you should take the time to analyze that poster because, man, yeah, it makes some great commentary of a woman in a man's world and the power of femininity. Yeah. One might say this is the worst reference I think I've ever made on this show, and I'm sorry. One might even say that this poster sparked a feminine phenomenon. I'm going to leave that one for you. You either get it or you don't. All right. Last question that we do when we're wrapping these up. We got to know, what snack or beverage do you take to the drive-in with you? If we're going, like we mentioned earlier, we went to the drive-in. What are you bringing? For me, it's easy. I'll go first, let you think about it. I'm going to Wendy's because it's a drive-in. This is how you do things, guys. You stop, and I'm doing that like 4 for $5 or whatever. I'm getting like chicken nuggets, a cheeseburger, some fries, maybe some more chicken nuggets. A Frosty, maybe, I don't know. I'm doing that 4 for $5, though. I'm bringing Wendy's with me. What are you bringing with you?
It's one of two things. I'm going to go in one of two directions. One direction is orange Frosty with cheeseburger and fries.
Ooh.
You're going
to Wendy's with me.
Solid drive-through. And the other direction would be chocolate-covered Raisinets. I don't exactly know why. Ooh. Ooh, those chocolate covered Raisinets, just popping those and watching this movie.
This is so weird, but like when we used to go to the theater as a family, when I was growing up, my parents would get popcorn. They put in like a little bucket for me and my brother to share, and they had their own. And me and my brother would add a bunch of crunch to it. I was like, oh, this is so great. And then we were finally old enough to go to movies without mom and dad. They never dumped the butter on top. They did like buttered salt. So it wasn't like liquidy. And me and my brother said, oh yeah, we're just pouring butter on top of the bunch of crunch and adding salt to it. And it was life changing. I spoke in tongues. It was great. Oh, I kid. Anyway, With that, if you want to comment on my blasphemy, you can go over to Podchaser and rate and review our show. Also, you can go to Spotify to leave a rating. There's like a little 5-star thing in an Apple podcast. You can leave a rating and review there as well. Guys, again, be sure to check out the show notes for a playlist of our other summer drive-in series, and be looking next Friday for one from the 1960s. It's going to be great. I don't know what it is yet. This year, we hid them from each other, so I don't know what the people's picks are. I don't even know what our second pick is. We're going to be back with the 90s in 4 weeks. I don't know what we're doing for that. But guys, come back, check it out. Hope you enjoyed the drive-in. And remember, we're all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hey friends, this is your pal, Will Rose, and I have some exciting news. Systematic Geekology will return to Theology Beer Camp this year, October 17th through the 19th in Denver, Colorado. And we hope that you can join us. We are part of Theology Beer Camp in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at my home church in my hometown. And that year, Theology Beer Camp was called the God Pods. And then we were in Missouri, a part of the Geek Stage. Yes, we had a whole entire Geek Stage where we had workshops and speakers and had incredible conversations. And Theology Beer Camp last year was called the God Pods Strike Back. So you kind of see where this is going. And so this year, the theme is the return of the God Pods. And so if you head over to Eventbrite and follow God Pods 2024, or hop over to Instagram, follow it there. And if you enter promo code Geekshire, you see what we did there? Yeah. Wilbo Baggins approves. If you enter Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, you'll get $25 off your ticket price. Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, Geekshire. Yeah, say it with me, Geekshire. Enter that, you get money off your ticket, and you can join us and hang out and drink beer and have great food. And even if you don't drink beer, you can have incredible food and beverages and conversations with your favorite host here at Systematic Geekology. The Geek Stage is growing. I'm proud of that, and we thank Tripp for this opportunity. We hope to see you at Theology Beer Camp, the Return of the God Pods 2024.